And now our main topic today are Kansas City City Council members who are stepping down as a result of term limits. Cindy Serco is here. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Jan Markison's back. Jan, how are you?
Nice to be here.
And John Sharp. John, welcome to you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, what surprised you most, Jan, about being a member of the Kansas City Council? What came out of the blue that you weren't anticipating?
Well, I think one thing that I maybe just was unfamiliar with was the professionalism of the city staff. Mm. You know, you kind of have this impression that, oh, people at the city, you know, they can't get another job. You know, they're just there because. But I've worked with the finance department and with people in the water department, and the level of competence, the level of professionalism is such a wonderful benefit for our city.
Well, that's kind of nice to hear.
Well, and frankly, it did somewhat surprise me because, mm-hmm. you know, you hear the negative, but I just can't get over how well served we are by the professional staff at City Hall.
Cindy Serco, how about you?
I would have to agree with that. It is amazing how much negativity that city staff get, and they just keep on.
They roll, don't they?
They roll, and they are national leaders in their sectors. Every single one of them, every department has some role at a national level.
Mm-hmm.
We're leaders in innovation and sustainability. We're really pushing the envelope on many, many things, and there's no way the policymakers can do that themselves. It has to be hand in glove with management yeah. and staff and the policymakers.
John Sharp, you know, 8 years ago, you were not a newbie. You had already had a one go-round at City Hall. Jan Markison and Cindy Serco were new. What surprises you about being a member of the City Council?
Well, I'd been through it once before,
yeah.
so it wasn't a great shock. I think one thing that continues to surprise me is that so many of our residents don't know about a lot of city programs or city rules and regulations. It used to be if you drove down a block in the morning, you'd see a newspaper on about every driveway. You sure don't see that anymore. And even
you're
with
cutting
all
deep here, John. Yeah.
Even with all the blogs and the social media, there's still a lot of folks that don't know what the rules are about when we pick up trash, how to set out bulky items,
yeah.
and they're just kind of disconnected.
Hmm. Jan, how much ability do you have as a member of the council to really make a difference? What's your sense after 8 years?
Well, I'm surprised, but we really are the voice of the city, and I feel like it has been not easy to make a difference, but if you work hard and if you spend the time to do your homework, I really do feel like we've made some significant improvements.
Like what?
Well, one thing that I'm most proud of is the adoption of our sewer overflow control plan. That was something that had been, we'd been talking about it.
This is the multi-billion-dollar plan.
Yes, probably $5 billion plan over
the federal government, but what's a billion dollars here or there,
right.
whatever.
We were under a federal mandate to clean up our sewer system, and it had been going on for a while. Kay Barnes had appointed the Wet Weather Task Force, and they had talked about it for many years, and we got it done. And
mm-hmm.
so I really think that's a
and
huge
and you were sort of the point person in that
I
effort.
Was during the first term, yes,
yeah.
I was. And people said that Ed Ford, who was the chair at the time, must have not liked me very well because he gave me that assignment. But actually, it was fascinating, and I do feel like that's something that is our legacy of this council, the last term especially.
I mean, the notion that you're improving the sewers isn't exactly sexy, isn't exactly glamorous. I mean, do you wish you could have focused on something else, or were you okay with that?
No, I kind of pride myself on being the champion of unsexy causes. The other thing I worked pretty hard on was the making sure that the city's financial house was in order. So
mm-hmm.
I was very pleased that the citizens adopted a charter change to make sure that we have a 5-year financial plan adopted by November of every year. So, you know, financial stability and sewers are not glamorous issues, but I do feel like those are things that leave a lasting legacy for the city and leave us in pretty good shape.
Cindy Serco, how much impact can a council member have?
Well, when you coordinate with each other, and I have experiences both with John and Jan. Jan did that front end over flow control. The first project landed in my district. And, you know, we allow each other to take things to another level through collaboration. We were able to take the Marble community project and turn it into a neighborhood asset versus just being a sewer program or mm-hmm. project that needed to happen. Mm-hmm. John and I had collaborated through our PIAC dollars together. We really have put the Southland collectively on a great footing to grow. And even before we're out of office, we're seeing the fruits of that collaboration. Mm-hmm. So when you have a team mentality, and we do not agree on everything at all, but we collectively have conversations with each other, work on things. And I think this council in particular has looked at the big picture. When money is really, really tight, it gets tough to get little pet projects that just make yourself look good, mm-hmm. that you really have got to move the entire community. And that takes collaboration. And I really, I don't know that I was surprised, but particularly the second term, we really have done a great job at that.
You know, Councilman John Sharp, you know, members of Congress have these big staffs. You know, state lawmakers have staffs and people to help them out. You guys have, what, one person in the office, basically. And I'm wondering, how do you get your research done? How do you get the information you need to make the important decisions you've got to make, John?
Well, that's one of the toughest things, because our staff person is basically tied up just doing constituent casework, mm-hmm. because we get so many requests for service. I've been very lucky to have staff assistants that I was able to hire from the 311 Action Center, so they knew who to contact in the various departments, and it's not always who the organization chart might indicate is the right person to contact. Yeah. They know who they can contact to get something done, but the lack of that research capability is a weakness. And we get a lot of information from the National League of Cities, from the Missouri Municipal League, and all three of us have been active in those organizations. But having some independent research capability, at least available for the council as a whole, would probably be a good thing.
Well, what's your, in your view, John, the biggest accomplishment of the last 8 years?
Well, speaking as a council person from South Kansas City, I think the groundwork we've laid for significant economic growth in the Southland, which will benefit the whole city.
What did you do exactly?
Well, basically, we now have the Cerner project being constructed. And if you drive by the old Bannister Mall site,
right.
It's already going vertical. You can see the construction starting, and that will bring 16,000 Cerner jobs to that area. And that's something the 5th and 6th Council District representatives have worked closely together with. Cindy's been a great help on it. The Oxford on the Blue project by Jim Stowers, Jr., which will be a high-tech office park on the north side of 87th. That probably wouldn't have happened without the Cerner project. North Point Development has announced plans for an industrial park on that undermined area on the south mm-hmm. side of 87th. So those are all tremendous boost to the Bannister corridor. We've got the Burns McDonald expansion that is rapidly progressing there at Warnell and Bannister on the mm-hmm. west side. We have plans, and the federal government has approved demolishing the old 1940s contaminated buildings there at the Bannister Federal Complex at Bannister and Troost, cleaning up the contamination and mm-hmm. that land. The title should be transferred in 2016 to Centerpoint Development, the redeveloper. So you're going to see tremendous growth along that whole Bannister corridor from state line clear over to Lee Summit.
Yeah. Jan Markison, a few minutes ago you said if you put in the time, it's amazing how much you can sort of accomplish. Putting in the time means how many hours a week? What's a council member work?
Basically, you work 24/7. I mean, we get up. I'm an early
Cindy's
riser.
Nodding her head.
I get up, answer emails first thing in the morning, go to coffee usually with somebody, have meetings outside of the city hall usually, except for Wednesdays and Thursdays, and many, many evenings I have one or two events. So it is do things on the weekends.
7 days a week.
It's pretty much, if you really take your job seriously, you have things, opportunities. Some of them are, you know, things that are just exciting to go to, you know, a ribbon cutting or an event at one of the arts places. But, you know, those help you do a better job because you're engaged in what's going on in the city. And we are so lucky to be involved in city government right now when things are just booming in Kansas City. So it's very, very exciting.
Well, speaking of that, Cindy Circo, each of you served 4 years under Mayor Mark Funkhauser. Now you're serving, you've served 4 years under Mayor Sly James. What was the difference?
Well, I think our saving grace under the previous mayor was that the whole entire nation was in a recession along with us.
Meaning?
So other cities weren't surpassing us when we did not have quality leadership in that period of time. So they were slowed down too. So I think that was an advantage. It was difficult. I did not come in thinking it was going to be difficult. I came in as a brand new elected official, bright-eyed, ready to be a team player. And it very quickly became that it was something very, it wasn't even political. There was just something very different in this dynamics.
Meaning what? Help me with that.
Well, you know, we all got punished. If once we were seen as a threat, I was given housing and was making very quick progress of taking the housing out of receivership. But that was not seen as a positive. That was seen as a negative, that I was trying to embarrass the mayor or look better than him. So it's a dynamics that's hard to explain. But it wasn't a healthy one.
It was a punitive atmosphere, you're saying.
It was a punitive atmosphere. It wasn't a collaborative atmosphere. It was not good for the city. And this is, we talk about term limits. I think term limits are unnecessary because you get to sit out a term and come back. And voters proved that they are smart enough to know when someone else needs to move out of office. Funkhauser didn't even come out of the primary. The voters knew what was going on. They understood this was not a healthy dynamics for the city and changed leadership when it was necessary. So we go fast forward to the current mayor, who came in with a very positive attitude. The difference was you would hear Funkhauser say, "It is not my job to be the cheerleader." Well, it is the job of the mayor to be a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And Mayor James has been our cheerleader on a national level, has brought us attention internationally, and understands his role of being the number one cheerleader for this city.
John Sharp, this difference between Mayors Funkhauser and James, do you agree with what Councilman Circo just laid out there?
I think the biggest weakness that Mayor Funkhauser had was the inability to know how to take an idea and actually make it happen. He had some good ideas, but there was a disconnect on how to take that idea and turn it into reality, turn it into a program, get an ordinance passed. Since he left here, he's head of governing, which is a think tank in Washington. They put out a magazine monthly, and it really is pretty well done, but there was just that disconnect. And as Cindy said, he certainly didn't view himself as a cheerleader for the city, because I remember when the first attempt to redevelop the Bannister Mall came along and we wanted to have the soccer stadium there, and he was very hesitant to support it, was not supportive initially. We had to get so many calls in from neighbors to the mayor's office that it shut down their phone system that then he finally came around. Now when we had the Cerner deal, we didn't have to go through that with Mayor James. He understood the benefits of that, and that's just one example of a clear difference in how they served in their office.
You know, as you guys leave office, there are obviously a lot of issues are still on the table. I guess there would be for any group that leaves office. I'm thinking of a downtown convention hotel, Uber, the future of KCI, Eastside development, expansion of streetcars. I hear rumblings, John, that we're close to a deal on a new downtown convention hotel. Is that true?
Well, I hope we are. Cindy did a lot of work on that in the prior term, and when you look at the deficit that the Power and Light District is running every year, and of course the city has to make up that deficit, and that was a deal that took place when none of us were in office, I think the only way the Power and Light District really is successful economically, although it's very successful being a fun place to go, is that we have to have more people coming into Kansas City. Now, the new residential growth downtown will help, but we also have to attract conventions and tourists, because all that brings money into Kansas City, and we're losing conventions to towns that we used not to even be competitive with, that they were a rung below us because we don't have that quality hotel space within walking distance of the convention center.
City Circle, how close are we?
I think that there is a desire, a wish, and the deal has to be what is best for the city. In the meantime, we have to balance our debt along with that need. No one is disputing the need is there. The need is there, but it has to be the right deal. And I think that we can get there.
Are we close?
I think we can get there.
You're smiling, Cindy.
I think we can get there.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Uber. We'll talk about the future of KCI. We'll talk about streetcars and a whole bunch more. We'll take your phone calls, too, at 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation about preparing your finances for taxes and end of life, you can find that at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll look at environmental conservation efforts and challenges right here in Kansas City and nationwide. This hour, we're visiting with the three outgoing members of the Kansas City City Council who are facing term limits. They are Cindy Serco, Jan Markison, and John Sharp. Jan Markison, what about Uber? The mayor is hinting broadly that a deal may be at hand. That's of interest to a lot of folks, a lot of our listeners. Where are we with that?
Right. Well, it's so interesting because so many of my constituents use Uber.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're flooded with emails from people who want to see it continue. And we do want to see it continue. But I think the city's role is to make sure that they have appropriate insurance, that they pay the same type of business license that we require of all other businesses.
And why is that important?
Well, they are treated differently, but it's important because we're responsible for public safety. And so we want to make sure that the transportation is, you know, done by credible people, that the cars are in, you know, decent shape, that they're inspected.
But you have the impression that some cities have just said, come on in, operate.
Let
her rip.
I don't know if the cities have said that. I think Uber is their model is to just go in and start the business. And then if the cities, you know, object, then they kind of backpedal. But I think we're making some strides, and it sounds like we're going to be able to reach an agreement that we can all live with, because it is a wonderful service. We want to encourage those type of entrepreneurial efforts. They have Airbnb and those types of sharing economy. That's kind of the wave of the future, and young people in particular appreciate those options. So I think we are just learning how to work with those types of emerging type of businesses.
John Sharp, from your perspective, has the city negotiated in good faith? Because the implication, at times at least, has been that maybe it hasn't from Uber's standpoint.
Well, that's sure the impression they're trying to give people. But basically, the city's had to negotiate with itself, because we'd make an offer and we'd never get a response. And then we'd sweeten the offer a little and still wouldn't get a response. So they really weren't being upfront and collaborative in trying to work something out. It was kind of a your way or the highway approach. And of course, during the whole time they're talking to us, their lobbyists, and they've hired a whole lot of them, are pushing legislation in Jeff City that would really take the city out of the equation.
And Governor Brownback just vetoed a bill yesterday that would have impacted, freed Uber from regulations, basically, is his point of view.
Well, they really want to operate without any regulations, and of course they have been booted out of some cities. They've been sued in some cities, and I think it's essential that we make sure that people that ride in Uber vehicles have insurance protection if they're involved in a wreck, because if you're just driving your personal car and you're using it for your business, your insurance doesn't cover you, and that would be a real risk to people who might get horribly injured in a wreck and then have no protection at all. I think we need to have background checks on the drivers, because there have been cases where Uber drivers have assaulted and sexually assaulted some of their customers. So I think those are just essential public safety things.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Adrian tweeted us this question: any chance of expanded public transportation from Kansas City suburbs to downtown? You're out there a little ways in your 5th District. Cindy, what about that?
That's true, and I can't use public transportation from my home into downtown just because of the time frame it would take for me to use it. But I think the conversation of we're moving, we have a long way to go. Joe Reardon, I told him, I'm like, oh, you're here now at KCATA.
The former mayor of Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas, right.
And I'm like, it's all solved, right? And he laughed. But I think having someone that can really address this as a regional issue, we can't put transportation in one mode, though. We are a multi-mold city. We have to continue to grow that way. And there is great work around that through Mid-America Regional Council by mapping out the connectivity from one type of transportation to the other. And I think we get sometimes advocates for one type, and we have to understand that this is a system. And we've got a long way to go, but we have made great strides in connecting that system, and the streetcar is part of that. And I think we have a lot of growth to go from there.
This is a really complicated set of decisions, right? Making the system work across state lines. This is complicated stuff.
It's complicated because you're over multiple jurisdictions. You know, there's advocacy groups for every one type. But I think just laying out and really understanding that there is a group of people that are regionally working together that understand that transportation system, that network. And the network means multiple types of transportation are connected into that. You know, the MAC system. We have answers. It's now funding, and what's the next line, and what do we do next, and where are the champions for that collective, larger, bigger picture?
Again, you were referring to former Mayor Joe Reardon, who's now going to oversee the ATA, the Area Transportation Authority. So,
correct.
A very popular choice for a lot of elected officials, seeing Joe take the helm of that organization.
I think that he will have some positive movement to make this a regional asset.
Well, Jim Markison, speaking of transportation, a big announcement this morning. There's going to be a party on Friday night. You can go in front of the first streetcar stop in front of a restaurant downtown, Anton's. Folks can hang out and take selfies in front of the first streetcar stop. Is the streetcar system going to be expanded south beyond the Crown Center area out to the Plaza and UMKC, or what are the prospects for
that? Well, I sure hope so, and I will be working hard on that even after I'm not on the city council. As the downtown council at their annual luncheon, they really highlighted how the downtown streetcar is going to be a game changer for Kansas City. Mm-hmm. We are already seeing so much development, private development along the line, whether it's residential, businesses, hotels, motels. I mean, every week we get new developers coming to show us their plans, and they say we want to be in downtown along the streetcar line. And the people going out to UMKC, they voted for the extension.
I was going
to
say, this is very pretty much popular. Your district here.
They didn't necessarily want it to go along the trolley trail, but we addressed that. And so the people in the South are clamoring for it to get to UMKC. The students want that to connect the new conservatory downtown with the campus, and that'll help connect Hospital Hill through the coordinated bus system. But I really think that once people see the streetcar completed next year before the Big 12 tournament, they will get so excited, and they will say, how can we get this to UMKC? Because if it's just the downtown, that isn't really going to achieve the goals.
So what is the next step? What has to happen now to make what you just described a reality?
Well, we have some champions of the extension, so I think they are going to have to step up and continue to be excited about it. But I think what's going to really make the difference is when people are able to hop on the streetcar downtown, experience what it's like to be there. And, you know, I think then we'll be able to do that. The problem is it takes 5 years from the time we agree to the extension till it can actually be a reality. So the federal transportation process is very lengthy, and we try to get things going. That was kind of our strategy, was to get things going while we had an administration, the Obama administration, that is very supportive mm-hmm. of streetcars and that type of transportation funding. And so we really thought if we could, we would try to get that during this administration. Obviously, we didn't have enough time to really educate the voters and the citizens about what it would mean and how it could help economic development mm-hmm. in their communities. But there was no question that the South Line to UMKC was incredibly popular. I think it got over 60% of the vote in that area.
You know, Cindy, how popular is the streetcar out in your district? Again, the 5th District, which is roughly southeast Kansas City, butts up against Raytown. What do your folks think about this?
So it's very interesting how supportive. I went out to neighborhood meetings, and they want to know when it's going to be their turn. And they'll very likely be the last in line for something like that. I think the larger conversation that Mike Sanders, county executive of Jackson County, has done a good job of educating his community what rail could do for them. Mm-hmm. It's very unfortunate that the last vote was politicized, because the east side could benefit dramatically from streetcar delivering a transportation access to people that could use the jobs that go directly into downtown. That was highly politicized. I think it is very important, and I think we'll see a citizens group be the champion of the extension and try to take as much political fodder out of that, that this is something the next leg, the citizens of the next leg, want and will put their time, energy, and effort into.
And you're talking about the leg going from Crown Center to the plaza, or are you talking about the east side?
The south leg. Mm-hmm. The east side really missed a huge opportunity, mm-hmm. a huge opportunity, because most of that leg would have been paid through the larger pool of money for that extension. And if they get stuck out there on their own to pay for that, it becomes a much harder project to accomplish.
Yeah, John Sharp, again, you're in the Southland. That's your district. What do you make of all this streetcar stuff?
Well, I think if we don't extend it in the near future to at least the UMKC campus, people in future generations will think we're nuts mm-hmm. because the very short line downtown is nice, but that really doesn't do what we want it to accomplish, and that is to promote economic growth along some of our key corridors. And it just makes sense to connect it to the plaza, to UMKC. But there was a lot of controversy in the Brookside area about putting it in the trolley track trail right-of-way. And I think many people, when they thought of the streetcars, they were thinking of commuter rail and diesel engines and things that were pretty noisy and not the quiet electric streetcars we have. But as you got further south, out into the Waldo area, the Bannister corridor, people wanted it out there, wanted to go to the Cerner campus, for instance.
Yeah.
And I hope that at some point our railroads in the community will once again be cooperative, where we can consider commuter rail that would run on existing underused rail lines.
This is Mike Sanders' idea, the Jackson mm-hmm. County executive, but his whole idea for a whole system, metro-wide system you're talking about.
Absolutely, yeah. Where you could get from one end of the metro area to another, and that's much cheaper because you put it on existing rail lines. You just have to put some stations in and maybe double track some of it.
Jan, to what extent does the lack of a world-class public transportation system hold back this community?
I think the biggest problem is with attracting young people, the millennials, and you know the entrepreneurs that we are so that are flocking to Kansas City, but a lot of them don't have cars. They don't want cars. They want a good transportation system. They want to live and work, you know, in a walkable city. Mm-hmm. And so I think that and as a city planning, the senior citizens. That's a huge population bubble. The baby mm-hmm. boomers are becoming retirees. They don't want to drive. They don't, you know. At some point, they're not able to drive, and they all want, and we all want, you know, to be able to be without a car and to get where we want to go, to get to the grocery store, to get to entertainment, to get to our doctor's appointments, on public transportation.
We haven't gotten to the whole idea of crime yet, and I'm wondering, the city, with much fanfare, saw a big dip in its homicide rate last year. The number fell into the 70s. Is that a harbinger of things to come, or is it too early to tell, Cindy Sergo?
Well, I still think it's too early to tell. I think the program is working at Casey Nova. It's proving itself out, but 1 year is not the measuring stick. We want to make it sustainable. So continuing on that same path, and it makes sense. I mean, there are people that we can divert out of the life of crime, and trying to change the culture of, you know, revenge, and all of that plays. It's a holistic approach, and all of that plays, and that's a lot of work. And that much work and that much coordination is hard to sustain. So we have to stick to it, make sure that our processes and procedures are in place, and the leadership continues to be supportive of that.
John Sharp, you've been watching this for a long time. What do you make of the progress that's been made, at least from your vantage point?
Well, I think the Kansas City No Violence Alliance has great potential, and I think we just need to stay with it. It achieved quite a bit of success in reducing homicides last year, although they're still way too high. Now, so far this year hasn't been so good. But that model has worked in other communities where you really focus your law enforcement efforts on the criminal networks that we have in town, because it's not like everyone in town commits one felony a year. It's a very tiny percentage of our citizens that are committing the huge percentage of our crimes. But with KC No Violence Alliance, they've mapped out these criminal networks. They know who's in them by name. They know who's connected to one another. And they're focusing their law enforcement efforts on those people. Plus, they're offering a social services component. So they bring these people in. They have call-ins. I've been there. And they let them know they've been identified, and they offer them social services help if they want to straighten out their lives. And I think that will work. We just have to stay with it, because we're not going to turn it around overnight, but it's worked in other cities. It will work here.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today. Cindy Sergo, Jan Markison, John Sharp, three outgoing members of the Kansas City, Missouri City Council. Thank you for your service, and enjoy a little more free time.